Hi, everyone, and welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, we are doing a special episode of an author spotlight, and joining me is author Mariah Enkenman. Hello, Mariah.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Welcome. Welcome. We have had you on in the past, and it is always a delight to have you.
Thank you. It's always wonderful to come on. I enjoy it so much.
All right, I'm going to read your bio real quick, and then we'll keep going. Best-selling author Mariah Enkenman lives in the beautiful Rocky Mountains with her two rambunctious children and loving spouse, who is her own personal spell checker when her dyslexia gets the best of her. Mariah loves to lose herself in a world of words. Her favorite thing about writing is when she can make someone's day a little brighter with one of her books. Okay, so let's talk. So you have a new book coming out, Somebody to Love. But before we talk about that, let's get to know you a little bit as an author. Like I said, we have had you on the podcast before, but we definitely have some new listeners. So these might be things that you've answered before, but that's okay. So what initially drew you to writing romance in general in the first place?
So I've always, you know, like most writers, I've always written, I've always loved stories. I started writing with my mom, who was a professional clown. And so I'd help her write her little clown skits. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like where it got started. And then I came to the romance genre really late. I've talked about this before. I was like 25
mm-hmm.
and at the library, and I saw this like really cool, like dark book with a guy with a long jacket and stuff, and I picked it up. It was a paranormal romance, Sherilyn Kenyon, and I had never read romance before. I'm like, oh, this sounds interesting, you know, demons and stuff like that. I'm gonna read it. And so I read it, and I got to the spicy scene. I was like, I think this is a romance. I love romance. And then I went back through like all the like stories I've written and noticed that I had like romance subplots in all of them. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to write romance then. That sounds like fun. So then that was the beginning of the end for me. And I was like, that's it. Romance is, it's the winner.
That's a wonderful thing. Cause like so many authors that we've talked to, like they, like I like stole our like mom's like romance books when we were a teenager trying to like get those things in. And it's nice that like you've found those elements in the stories that you've always had, but you just never realized it. Cause it was like one of those things that didn't click before.
Yeah, because we did not have romance books in our house. My mom also has dyslexia, but hers is much bigger than mine. So she was never a huge reader, but she made sure all of her kids could read because she always had that stigma of not being able to read. So she worked really hard with us, which I'm grateful for. But we were, you know, more churchy conservative leaning household, so we had like those kind of books. We had the great classics, you know, and we would read all those. So we didn't have like romance spicy books in our house, so I had no idea like they even really existed, because they were not in my purview. And then when I found them, I was like, oh, yes, please.
And all you've of never it. Looked back.
All of it.
So when you're writing your books themselves, do you find it hard to differentiate and balance the development of your like romantic relationship with your characters with the rest of the story?
I don't think so, because for me, they usually intertwine so well, the romance and then like the other things that are going on, whether it's like a little bit of suspense and there's like someone chasing them, or if it's like a rom-com and there's like hilarious situations that are happening, especially with rom-coms, because if something is going wrong, which in a rom-com to make it funny, something has to go wrong in a hilarious way. Yeah. It's even more funny if the person that you like is there to witness that.
Yeah.
And so then the elements kind of blend in together. So for me, and the way I write in my stories, it's very easy to blend them together and make all of that come together in the story.
So when we've talked before, you talked like you have shown us your notebooks and your planning. Has that changed at all? Or is like your writing like...
It's just gotten more intense, I think. I think last time we talked, I hadn't started doing W plots, which is my favorite thing now. I found the W plot method, which is like a screenwriter method. And let me see if I have an example of a W plot here. I'm sure I have it somewhere. Oh, here it is. So this is one that I'm working on right now. I found the W plot. I can't even remember how I came across it. But you guys know I'm a heavy plotter. I've shown you like all my
The
plotting stuff
notes, yeah.
before. Yeah, and then I found the W plot, which means I can plot like a rough basic outline of a story in like a day. In like a few hours, I can come up with a W plot and I can send it to my agent and be like, what do you think of this story? And she can give me advice and stuff. And I just find it, for me personally, I find it so much easier to plot because then I get stuck less and I can see problems earlier. So I don't have as much problem fixing things later on. But yeah, I think I've just dived deeper into the world of plotting. Has fallen into the hole. There's no hope of coming back out.
So with this series, there's four siblings. So did you plot out the whole series before you started book one, or have you been plotting each book individually?
I've been plotting each book individually. I kind of had like an idea for each story, and the fourth book I plotted the whole thing out, and then went, no, this isn't going to work, and I don't like it, and threw that plot away and completely replotted the fourth book totally differently. And I like the fourth one much, much better because I have the first draft of the fourth one finished. But yeah, I just kind of had like the four siblings and they own a distillery and they're each gonna fall in love. And that was like just kind of the overarching series plot. But yeah, each one as I go along, I plot
So
each one
this
individually.
and this is your first fully like family series, right? Like you've done like a couple siblings in series before, but like this is full-fledged family series. Like
Yeah.
what Like, was it just something that came to you and you're like, oh, like I have these four people, I really want to tell their story and I'm just going to go with this? Or like, did you think, I really would like to write a family series and kind of go a little bit different direction than I had before?
It actually came about because I saw a bunch of people doing like brewery series, like set in a brewery, and I'm like, oh, I should do that, but I don't like beer. I'm actually allergic to beer and I don't like drinking it. And my spouse was like, babe, you love vodka. You should do a distillery series. And then I'm like, and then we can go to distilleries and I can count it as research, which we've done. And it's delightful. Thank you, Devil's Head Distillery. And so I was like, yes, that's brilliant. It's people that own a distillery. And he's like, and what if they were siblings? Because I have a lot of siblings. I'm one of six. So I'm like, yes. What if they were siblings and there's one girl and a bunch of brothers? Because we had one brother and a bunch of sisters. I always wanted more brothers. So I'm like, well, fictionally, I'm gonna have a lot of brothers. So yeah, I was like, what if they all own a part of the company? And so that also creates tension because when you're in business with friends or family, there can always be tension there and stuff. So yeah, I was like, yes, a distillery, and they're all siblings, and who doesn't love reading about brothers?
I know. I mean, I love a family series, and especially when you have this close-knit family, but you show the fact that yes, they're close, but they still fight, they still have issues, but like those little intricacies don't like demolish the relationship long term. I mean, they have little moments here and there where it's like, I don't know how they're going to come back from that, but it works.
Yeah. I think that's the hallmark of siblings, at least in my household. The more we insult you, the more we love you. So we call you a butthead, we call you a jerk. That's synonymous with I love you in sibling speak.
It's your love language.
It is. It is our love language, giving each other crap.
So you've been really open about your dyslexia and like all the other neurospicy life that you lead. Do you find that to be very challenging when you're writing, or does that kind of level you in some ways? Like, I personally, like, I have the attention span of a gnat. So like unless something really engrosses me, like I have a hard time focusing. And as I'm getting older, it's getting worse. But do you focus well, like when you start writing, or do you find you have to have little like tricks and tips or gadgets around to help you with that focus?
I have definitely discovered things that work. I can't write to music. It is too distracting. I will start singing karaoke, even if it's like no lyrics. If it's a tune with lyrics, I'll just start singing the lyrics. So I discovered that I have to write to white noise because I also can't write to silence because that's Also, then I can start hearing the electricity buzzing. So I do thunderstorms. I'll
Okay.
turn off like rainstorms and I can write to that. I also have a difficult time writing in public because like I can feel people perceiving me. And so then I feel like I have to put my mask on. And so then
Right.
it's hard to write. So I would say I am more, I don't have a problem with distractions because I have to be very strict about how and where I write. Like I have a schedule and my schedule doesn't like to be upset. So like during the summer, it's so hard because my kids are home and
Right.
they're very distracting. So basically all I can do during the summer is edit
Yep.
or plot. You know, I can longhand plot anywhere, but when it comes to like sitting down and writing and getting in the character's head, I have to, you know, be at my desk. I have to have my rainstorm stuff. I have to turn off all my notifications so no one's bothering me because if someone interrupts me, then it's
Right.
like, ah, you've ruined my groove. You've thrown off my groove. Thrown off the emperor's groove. So yeah, I do have to ha be very like conscious and strict of my writing time and how I write because that's just what works best for my brain.
That it's good that you found that, because like I said, as I get older, mine it's getting worse. Hello, perimenopause, you're a delight. But it's really hard, because I actually was working on an edit the other day, and I was not in a a great environment for it, because I had to get it done. And it's like every little sound, I was like, ooh, a squirrel, ooh, another squirrel. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to finish this. And I know that's something that you've been very open about, and I've appreciate that openness as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, when I first got my autism diagnosis and I, you know, posted about it on social media, my spouse was like, because he's ADHD and he's like, are you sure you wanna do that? And of course I got some hate and I got some people with nasty comments. But then there were so many people that were like, oh my gosh, thank you. You know, I struggle with this too, or I have this too, or, you know, I always get parents coming up to me being like, oh, my kid is dyslexic and wants to be an author too. It's so cool. So I know that hate is coming, but the people who need to see that, I think, are more important than the people who are going to hate on me. And, you know, as a clown and a theater kid, I'm used to hecklers. So it's fun. Just block and move away. That's what I do.
Do you find any challenges being in the romance genre?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, fun. I mean, we are, first of all, we're like the highest selling genre. We, I think it's like 50% of the market is romance. We keep the publishing industry afloat. But because we're romance, because some of the books have spicy scenes, you know, because it's mostly written and read by women, there's so much misogyny and there's so much shame involved. Like, I can't tell you how many people I've been like, what do you do? Oh, I'm an author. What do you write? Romance. And then comes the comments, just all the comments or the suggestions. Like, I can help you. Oh, the gross, gross men on the internet. No, thank you.
So it's funny, my oldest, well, actually both my kids swim, but my oldest, I was talking to one of the moms at one of his practice, and she was like, she had her Kindle and she was reading. I was like, oh, what are you reading? And then I had that moment where I'm like, is she gonna tell me something that is gonna be good or maybe not so great? And she was spouting off these romance books. I'm like, oh man, this is awesome. We can talk about this. And then probably 2 months later, she's like, she had just finished a mafia book. I'm like, oh, that one's really good. I have another one that would be really good for you to read. And then I had to pause. I'm like, I look at her, I'm like, how important is consent to you? She looks at me and she's like, sometimes. Like she was afraid to say it. I'm like, oh, I definitely have the books for you then. But so we talk about them all the time now and very open about it. And it's great because I don't have to worry about that. But there are some people where I come across where they're like, what do you do? I'm like, oh, I do this and this. And they're like, oh, I'm like, yeah, oh, it's very good. It's like, it's a job. I mean, I don't say that when you tell me you're a teacher.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't have any. I was recently at a book signing and this very, very nice old man came up and sat by me and was asking about my books. And so I was telling him about my books. And I was like, and they're open door spicy. And he's like, what does that mean? And I mean, that means they have intimate scenes on the page. He's like, intimate. I'm like, they have sex on the page. And he was like, he just like turned white. He's like, oh, well, I don't know if I'd like that, but my sister might. I'm like, they're not for everyone. They're not
They're
for you.
not for
Give your
everyone.
sister a bookmark. There's my website on there. She might like them. If you like fantasy, I can recommend Terry Brooks to you. He's great. Like, people are like, how do you talk to, how do you, I'm like, have you seen my book backpacks with the shirtless man covers? Like, I am not embarrassed at all. I don't have shame in what I do because there is no shame in it.
There is no shame in it.
We're
And
just
that's the
making
big
people
thing.
happy. Yeah.
All right, so let's talk somebody to love. This is coming out September 19th, 2024. Some of the tropes, they make a baby pact. It's friends to lovers. She is a little bit nerdy. She is definitely neurospicy, and it is a small town. So what was some of the, we talked about like the whole distillery aspect, but what was some of the inspiration for the characters in this book? And let me just say, when I saw this cover, I know Joke was like, wow, this totally looks like Mariah's husband, Jolly. He's blonde.
It's really He's like, did you mean to do that? I'm like, maybe. No.
Then
Yeah.
I was like, I wonder if she did that consciously.
I really did not. I was just kind of looking to match the first cover with the flannel, because Colorado flannel distilleries. And BJ has long hair and a beard, because who doesn't love a long-haired bearded hero? I mean, maybe it's just me because that's my spouse, but I love it. And let's see. So these characters, BJ is like, I'm calling it, he's my most cinnamoniest cinnamon roll ever. He's so sweet, golden retriever energy. And it's best friends to lovers. Penny is his best friend. They've been friends forever. She is super nerdy, autistic, on the spectrum, wants to be a mom. But I think all of us neurospicies can agree it can sometimes be hard to get meaningful relationships when you're neurospicy. So no luck in that. And unfortunately, trouble with adopting, because if you're a single woman, that's a strike against you. If you're neurospicy, that's another strike against you. I have a lot of friends who have adopted and been in that world, and it can be a struggle and it can be hard. And so that's why she decides to go with the IVF treatment, insemination, and ask her best friend, because who better than your best friend who you know and who is a great guy? And so I just really wanted this to be a story about friends supporting each other, supporting each other's dreams. And that whole thing where you're like, you never realize that the person who is perfect for you is like right in front of you. Because they are just so perfect for each other, but they don't want to lose what they have, and they're so scared of that they have, they've never started anything, because that in relationship that is most important to you, if you change that and it destroys that is terrifying. It's a terrifying thing to think of. So that's kind of their struggle in the book, around that. And I just love a good friends to lovers.
Well, and one thing I really enjoy, and this is in chapter one, so I'm not spoiling anything, is like when she decides that she's going to ask BJ, there's a whole thought process behind it. Like she went through the book, she went through like the jobs, like the qualifications. Like when you go through those like IVF sperm donor stuff, like there's like lists and lists of like information, like age, body type, like all that stuff. But her whole thought process is, like there's that nature versus nurture like argument that she goes through. She's like, I need to know that they had a good upbringing. I need to know that they were a good person, like who they were inherently. She's like, the paperwork doesn't tell me, like, were they a bully? Were they a kind person? Were they like a star athlete? Were they this or this or this? And I really enjoyed that. I mean, granted, the neurospicy like side, like she's gonna overthink. But at the same time, like the overthinking is very valid in this case.
And that is Penny to a T. She does have that overthinking brain that thinks of every possibility, every problem, every solution. That is just how her brain works. She needs all the information before she can make a conscious decision. And so that's Penny.
Well, and when she first shows up to talk to BJ, like she freaks out and But he like recognizes when she's getting lost in her head, and I think that's a really nice thing, because that's the thing, like they have been friends for so long. Like she ended up skipping grades, so there's a little bit of an age gap between them, but it's not like significant. But like they were basically like growing up at the same time, but since she was so much younger but so intelligent, that like she had a lot of issues. Like she was bullied, she was made fun of, and like BJ became her protector. And so like he recognizes like when she gets so lost. And I just think their connection was just so easy for them.
He and it, you know, it even in the book, it talks about how the first time they met, he was protecting her from the people who were bullying her, because that's just who he is. You know, he's a twin, the oldest twin, the not the oldest twin, he's the second oldest twin. So even though he's like the oldest in the hierarchy, he's still the second child. He's got that very like protective instinct of those around him who he loves. He sees things that others don't, and he just wants to make everyone in his life happy, even if it's at the expense of his own happiness, which is detrimental. But he just wants people to be happy. He wants Penny to be happy, and he's not going to let her get away with, you know, lying to him or herself. If something's wrong, he's going to find out what it is, and he's going to do what he can to help.
Yeah, well, and one of the things, so the father of all the kids, he had passed away when they were little. And I feel like, so grief is always one of those things that people don't know how to deal with. But I thought that the way that you had all four of these kids and the mom like deal with grief over the same situation, but vastly differently, was so spot on. Because grief hits every single person differently. You can live through the same exact scenario as somebody else, but you are affected differently than they are. And I just think that was really well done, because it's so true. Like, grief is individual.
Yeah, that is absolutely true, and I appreciate that. We've had some grief in our family. We lost our brother a long time ago, and it hit each of us sisters differently. And recently, I've lost two brother-in-laws within the past 3 years, one really recently, and it's all affected everyone in the family differently, of course, you know, with our relationship to the person and how close we were. But everybody struggles when you lose someone you love. Everybody struggles, and struggles in a different way, and has a different coping mechanism. And you know, none of them are wrong, unless it's, you know, a very detrimental coping mechanism. But the way you cope with death and with healing, and it's not linear, and there's no timeline on it. So you can be fine this day, and then years later, you see something that reminds you of them, and you're like, ah, I'm a mess now. And so, yeah, I really wanted to showcase within the whole family how this person that they all loved, that was either a husband or a father to them, impacted them differently and shaped how they are as adults and how they deal with things differently, just because it does that to everyone based on who you are and
Yeah, I
relationships.
always like describe it as like the an ocean tide. Like sometimes the tide is low, sometimes it's bad, sometimes the swells are big, sometimes the swells are small. Like you never know like what you're gonna get, but it's always there. And like, and it could be years, and like different milestones hit very differently than others' milestones. And there's sometimes like you'll hit a year and you're like, oh, it's okay. In a random year that doesn't seem to make sense, like, is very hard.
Yep. I
I
like
think,
that. I like the ocean. That's a good analogy.
I just feel like, because BJ, like, his whole thought process, and again, this is in the beginning of the book, so we don't are not spoiling, but like, his whole thought process is he never wants to be in that situation. Like, he doesn't want to get married, he doesn't want to have kids, he doesn't want to have that closeness with another human being. But then at the same time, he has those relationships with his siblings, and he kind of already has that relationship with Penny. And so, like, he's kind of skewed in his thought process. But at the same time, he's like, if I don't have that paper, I don't have that title, like, it'll be okay.
That is exactly his mindset. It's like, buddy, you're already there. You're already there. But he's like, but if there's not a ring on it, then it doesn't count and it's totally fine, right? It's that thing we do to ourselves to trick ourselves. Like, if I don't say it out loud, it's not true, kind of thing. Yeah, That's BJ. He can be an ostrich sometimes, just stick his head in the sand and be like, nope, it's not real.
I feel
Sure.
like everybody can a little bit, though. There's a little bit of ostrich in everyone.
Yes.
So then one of the newer trends in romance is the lack of the third act breakup. Now, they have like a third act pause. Book one has an actual like third act breakup. How are you, like, what are your feelings on this trend?
I think depending on the book, it could work or not. I'm a sucker for a third act breakup. I like a third act breakup. But also if like I think there needs to be a third act something. Like whether it's a breakup or a threat, you know, or a shocking reveal. As long as there's a something and it works for the story, I think it's fine. You don't have to have the breakup. But I really do like the breakup because I do love the groveling scenes. I love it. I love it when they have to grovel because
I like a good
it's when
grovel.
they, you know, they spew out the words that they've been holding in the whole time and they, you know, crack their hearts open. And I love that part. It's one of my favorites. So
Yeah,
I'm a
I
fan, but it
agree.
can work if it's done right. I think you don't need it, but you need a third act something.
I agree 100%. Like a lot, like I'm a big suspense reader, and a lot of times those don't have the third act breakup, but they have like a third act event. Like there's always something huge happening. But like I agree, you need that. But I've read a couple books recently where there's nothing, and then it's like, but I need more.
Yeah.
But I mean, it happens. It's a trend. Hopefully, it's not a trend that lasts super long. But hey,
Trends
whatever.
come and go.
Exactly. But I do love the family dynamic in these Jackson books. I think that the relationships are wonderful. Charlie is a little dynamo that I can't wait to read about. I have a feeling she is going to be something else.
Oh, I am a little worried about Charlie's book because I know people are going to say she's an unlikable heroine because her whole story is that she's going to anger management for her anger issues, which she has
Yeah.
because her father died when she was young and she was raised with a bunch of brothers and, you know, all that. So, but I love Charlie. I love Charlie's story. I think she's great. She doesn't take anybody's crap. She says what's on her mind to the detriment of herself sometimes, but she is very sweet and kind and loving. She just doesn't take any abuse from anyone and doesn't allow people to abuse others. She's like, you know, an avenger, but the kind of like anti-hero kind of, because she's not sweet and nice about it. And I think some people might not like that, but if you like unlikable heroines, Charlie's gonna be your girl.
I'm looking forward to her, especially like when she spouts out the Jack Saxons. Like I can't even really say it, but like when I first read that, I was like, was that a typo? And then I read it again. I'm like, oh no, that was on purpose. And I loved it.
That's her loving nickname for her brothers.
I
Yeah.
mean, they were a little overbearing, so
They can be.
I think they deserve it.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, one final question. If there is one thing you want readers to take away from Somebody to Love, what would that be?
Oh, one thing. I would say don't let the fear of what could go wrong stop you from going after what your heart wants. I think that is this book in a nutshell. Don't let the fear of what could go wrong stop you from going after what your heart wants because that is their main problem. So
I
go
think that's
after what
great.
your heart wants because even if you fail, at least you can say you tried. If
I
you
love
never try,
that.
you'll never know.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much, Mariah, for joining me for this author spotlight and chatting about your new book.
Thank you so much for having me.
And until next time, everybody, happy reading.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.